I'm speaking today with Tracy Jensen, who is running for State Board of Education in District 6. Tracy, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Well, I guess I may have started 20 years ago when I became a teacher here in Texas. I was a classroom teacher in Aldine, and that was when the standardized testing was just started. And slowly over the years, the teachers became more and more, you know, disempowered, de-skilled as the years progressed. And so when I got my master's and continued on to more graduate studies, I became more influenced by the work of being a teacher advocate, and saw that that was really where my calling was, and becoming a teacher educator. And when I became a teacher educator, we were studying the TEKS, studying the curriculum, studying school issues and culture and all the things that are tied to teaching, and which is just, it's a lot more than just instruction. And that led me to looking more at the powers that determine those things, which ultimately is the State Board. And so in the past few years, of course, between the science curriculum and the social studies curriculum, that really engaged me in the political process, because I decided then that I couldn't just stand by. You know, I was working for teachers, but we were completely powerless in the system. So when I went to Austin in protest, I ended up protesting in Austin.
And the Save Our Schools protest?
It was under TFN, Texas Freedom Network, was, I went kind of with them as a group. But there was all these different groups that were there. Rod Page was there at the same time. The NAACP was there. All kinds of, NULAC was there. They were everywhere. And I think that it went across all boundaries and borders, because they were looking at the curriculum as I was, which was, it was an ideology discussion. It wasn't about education. It was about ideology. And when I learned that the board position was opening up, when Terry Leo was not going to run, who's been in place for a long time, I saw that as my opening. I thought, well, here's a chance. People are tired of the political aspect of the board, and I think that I'm able to really analyze and bring something to the table that hasn't been there before.
Okay. So
that was a long answer, but
that's okay. What do you see as being your top priorities if you're elected?
Well, I've been asked that before, and that's hard, because the top priority is the education aspect. And that's been lost, because it becomes such a personal agenda of each board member to mold the curriculum and charter schools, and everything is this, you know, very personal. And we've lost sight of what the true purpose of public education is. And so I see that as one of my main goals, is to kind of bring back what our goal should be, which is to improve our public education system. And I want transparency for the board. I want the board to actually have to answer for what they do. And right now they don't have to. They just kind of make decisions and move forward. And nobody really questions or asks them to justify it. So I think those would be really two big goals.
Okay. I mean, obviously, one of the board's functions is in, as you say, determining curriculum. And there have been a number of, shall we say, public spectacles over some of the changes that have been proposed in the curriculum recently. Mm-hmm. And so let's start by talking about the science curriculum. There was there's been a report released by the Fordham Institute, a conservative-leaning think tank, that gave Texas science curriculum a C. What's your view of the Texas science curriculum, the way it's taught, the way, you know, the way the subject matter is, you know, what's emphasized, what's not? What's your view of that, and what would you like to do with it?
What's interesting about creating curriculum, whether it's science, social studies, or whatever you're looking at, is the board really is focused on the minutiae, the detail of every word, and make sure that it's, you know, chosen carefully. And I think in the science curriculum, what they tried to do is backdoor it with things like strengths and weaknesses, and you know, intelligent design and those kinds of things, which are just, you know, a different way of saying the same thing. And I really take issue with the idea of in placing science and faith together. And I think they're really trying to do that in a very covert way, because they've been called to task for some things that they've said. And scientists and biologists and people who believe in the science have come in and said, you know, you're making them into, making students non-competitive. They're not going to be able to go out into other states and other universities and be able to understand what's going on, because they're being taught non-science things. And so I really have a problem with faith and science being put together. And I think there's a place for religion in this, in the discussion. If you're in a school that is a private chosen school system, I think you have that choice. But in public education, we don't have the luxury of everybody being the exact same and everybody seeing religion and science in the same way. And so I think science needs to remain science in scientific theory, which is accepted by the broad-based scientific community.
Social studies curriculum. We got a D on that one from the Fordham Institute.
Gosh, get an F.
Same question. And in particular, you know, when a lot of these discussions came up, a big part of the controversy there was from people of color who were arguing that the history was literally being whitewashed by the state board. What do you say about that?
The marginalization of the marginalized is, you know, it's essentially what it's come down to. When it was happening, it was almost humorous, because in a horrible way, because they were looking up things on Google and Wikipedia and relying on whether that movie, there was a movie about someone, or if it was a popular culture type reference. And it's amazing to me as an education person that people in charged with constructing public education don't rely on educators. And social studies was a perfect example of that, because it became about an agenda. And examples like the Atlantic slave trade being renamed to triangular trade, which no one uses as a historical reference. They've done a lot of things that just are going to really harm our students in the long run, because they're not armed with the information that they need to carry on to higher ed. The Texas Coordinating Board, the Higher Ed Coordinating Board, has said that the curriculum is not preparing our students. They reject it. They said they give it an F. So I think that there's just too many things going on that you just can't ignore it. There's a lot of things. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It should be a education issue.
There's a news story recently that the board has voted to put off buying new textbooks for the new standardized tests until essentially the legislature's promised to fund it.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a big argument over new textbooks, because with the cutbacks in public education and the new STAR test coming online, I mean, what is the board doing the right thing here? What should we be doing for these new tests? Do we have the right materials?
One good thing that's happened, like this summer, they passed, I think it's a bill, I think it's either 6 or 8. I'm trying to remember which number.
Six. And that appropriated money for new materials.
Correct? Yeah, the districts now have a power to buy their own materials that they see fit. So there's a part of the bill that says districts can they don't have to only buy board recommended materials, as long as they can teach what they're supposed to teach. Then they can use those whatever materials they choose, which is unusual. I think that's a positive thing, but I also think districts don't have the money. So, like when I was teaching, Ronald Reagan was still president in the textbooks. It was they were the last adoptions to come in. You know, the history textbooks are always you know, way out of date. There's no way you can keep up with them. So I actually, I'm glad that we're not able to fund new textbooks, because the way the curriculum is set up now, textbook companies would have to create textbooks that are inaccurate and false. And I think that that is a blessing in disguise, not for teachers, but for students who are going to get textbooks that are wrong.
Well, you know, when you were teaching, of course, the only way to deliver textbooks was on paper. Now there's electronic publishing,
exactly. Yeah.
iPads, all kinds of ways of delivering
right.
the material
right.
that doesn't rely on paper. Is the state doing enough for that? Is the State Board of Education on top of that?
You know, when I was teaching at U of H, one of the things that I talked about is how behind education is. It takes about 5 to 10 years for us to catch up with what's actually going on in pop culture with students. So, you know, the Facebook and Twitter and all these things are woefully, you know, they're just, it just can't be, you just can't catch up sometimes. And so education goes in cycles, and I think it's going to be a long time before it goes to the electronic. I think we will eventually go that direction. And I've always encouraged my students to never even open the textbook, to rely on multiple sources and multiple perspectives and compare and contrast and do all these things. However, not every teacher does that. They rely on the one source of information that the district says this is what you use. And unfortunately, you know, the longer we push it back, you know, the older the materials become, the more out of date they become. So I think it's going to be really hard for us to catch up, because we just don't have the money. There's just not the money. And the problem I have is there seems to be money for charter schools. We seem to be able to finance more charter schools and more of the almost the privatization of public education. And we are firing teachers left and right and consolidating classrooms and students to larger numbers. And so, you know, we've chosen what our priorities right now.
I'll get to that in a second, but since we're talking money, there was actually a constitutional amendment passed that directed a certain amount of revenue from the permanent school fund to be given to the schools, instead of being reinvested to be directed to the schools for purchasing materials or whatnot. Do you agree with that decision?
The permanent school fund is an interesting thing, because, you know, as an educator, I didn't know much about it. I didn't, you know, most people I talk to have never even heard of what it is. And so in investigating that, you know, there's some legal things that I'm really curious about as to what can and cannot be done with that, because it's very, you know, like I said, it's constitutionally restricted to what it can be used for. And some want the charter schools to be financed, like where you buy up land and then you rent it out to charter schools.
Yeah, there was an attorney general's opinion that said they can't do that.
Yeah, so that's what I mean by legally. There are some things that they're wanting to do that has to be kind of investigated, and I think that is a trend that's a little alarming, especially when we're so desperate for teachers and materials and things that keeping schools open and functioning. The permanent school fund, I'm curious, because I know it's become kind of a party issue, and to me it's not a party issue. It is what it is. It's the permanent school fund that was set up for schools to assist in the, you know, financing, to assist in the keeping the bonds going, to all those things that help public education, and I think it needs to keep on that focus.
I mean, at kind of a higher level, is the permanent school fund something that should be run by a bunch of elected officials, or is it something that should be managed by financial professionals?
That's a really good question, and honestly, I hadn't even thought in that vein before that it might be better served to be run by a separate entity. Now, I don't think TEA would be that entity, and I certainly don't think the Commissioner of Education should be that entity. But no, that's a very interesting question that I hadn't considered.
Do you think, you know, the TEA is responsible for a lot of the data that comes out about school districts and whatnot, who's exemplary, who's not, so on and so forth. Do they do a good job of making that data available and understandable so that we can, so that we take best advantage of it?
I think they give it, they do a good job of disseminating information. Do I agree in the information that's disseminated? No. I think labeling schools according to a standard that is questionable to begin with is a little difficult for me. And I've never liked the whole idea of exemplary, recognized, those kinds of things that were set up and the TEA puts out there. You know, they do a lot of stuff. They teach a certification and they're helpful with the materials for helping pre-service teachers. I always sent them to that site to get more information about becoming a teacher. I think that it has a good knowledge base, and I think that's what it should be. I honestly think that it's a really good database for educators and researchers, and I think it should become more focused on those things and also be focused on improving the environments for teacher retention, so that we don't lose teachers after the third or fourth year and they go elsewhere. That they are, you know, they're constantly being given the tools to revamp their profession.
I mean, do you, again, kind of at an existential level, I mean, is the State Board of Education, after all this time, kind of an anomaly? I mean, its role has evolved over the years. Legislature gives it power and then takes it away, depending on whether or not the board has done something to annoy it. There have been some legislatures have introduced bills to abolish the State Board and fold its functions into the TEA and the legislature and so on and so forth. Justify the existence of the State Board of Education. Why do we need a separate State Board of Education?
You know, I think the State Board has a role. I don't like the elected part of it. I don't like the partisan election part where, you know, you have to pick a party and then stick to a platform. I think that's a ridiculous way to run any education institution. The State Board, I think, is a voice, and I think that voice should reflect other voices, not just one particular type of voice. And whenever they are a body that makes decisions, I mean, other boards in other states function pretty well. You know, Iowa, Nebraska, they have boards that are actually set up by the legislature, that they're approved by the legislature, that they're, you know, they're not this entity that, you know, has to come up for election every few years and has to approved by the voters. I think that that makes a big difference, because then you look at the qualifications. Because, you know, we had a dentist on the board that relied on, you know, non-historians and Google and those kinds of things, and he was eventually voted out. But things like that, where they're making educational policy, but they have no basis for that educational policy. So I think that that's really... the State Board has a role in our society in Texas. I think that it should be redefined, and I should have some sort of oversight. Like I said, I think it should be in tandem with other entities that work together, instead of it as a sole entity that has no, you know, there's no oversight to it.
Well, but these elections are partisan, for better or for worse, and... You know, they tend to be low profile, low finance, and therefore low information to voters. How do you, in a district that's roughly twice the size of the congressional district, you know, how do you get people to know who you are and what you're about so that they can make an informed choice when they vote?
That's a real good question, because I've had to investigate that in the past couple of weeks. As we get closer to a possible primary, who knows? I'm married to a Republican. All my friends are Republican. I'm the lone Democrat, the lone wolf in my group. And they are always, whenever we talk, they're like, confused that it's even, I can't believe this is even an issue. And I think once voters understand that that there's a choice, that we don't have to have ideology over education, that they pick the education. And that is a really good question of getting the 1 million people that I have to, there's 1 million voters in the district, and I have, and it's a long, varied form of voters. And so I think that I'm, right now what I'm doing is I'm visiting with groups. I've been visiting, I was in Sharpstown on Saturday, I'm going to Spring in a couple weeks, I'm going to Cypress in a couple weeks, so in Maryland, and so I'm getting my name out there and my my conversation about education out there, and that's the thing, is getting to know them, to get to know me, and me get to know them, and it's just finding them, that's the problem, is getting people to say, hey, I want to come talk to you about what's going on in education. And most people are really like, that's wonderful, come, speak to us, tell us what's going on. And they're hungry for information. And they're, like you said, it's this, it's a low, you know, people don't see it as often, it's not as out there. But I think this election will be a little different. We got 3 Democrats running in the primary, which is unusual. And we've got a non-incumbent, you know, that's running. And so it should be an interesting election.
Okay. Well, unlike some other elected offices, we at least know what the map is going to be for the State Board of Education, because it's been pre-cleared. We still don't know when the primary is going to be, but when it happens, why should people vote for you in that primary and not one of your opponents?
Well, I think that, you know, I think the biggest argument could be the fact that I have so much experience in education at different levels, and that I've worked in schools all across my district with pre-service educators, that I've analyzed the curriculum, I've studied it for the past 20 years, it's been a part of my life, it's been my passion for 20 years, working with underserved schools in the Quest program at U of H, working with, and as my own classroom teacher in Aldine. I think that all that background, all that has been preparation for this role, and that I take to the role at, from the perspective as a parent of a middle schooler who wants other middle schoolers to succeed, and as an educator. And so I think that those two perspectives go very well for a state board member, if they can keep that focus, that this is about education and quality public education, and keep that focus.
Okay. Tracy Jensen, thank you very much for talking to me today.